make it again, knowing what you're doing verbally in this same life. So you do have the vow in the sense of having it in the form of a bhakta. You don't have it in the form of having agreed to take it on consciously in this life so that you could break it that way in this life. That's how I explain that one. Second one, he said about teaching emptiness. The text said the person you taught it to had to be Mahayana and had to get turned off and then go to Hinayana. And he said it also includes if you teach emptiness to someone who doesn't really want to listen to it or who would have a bad reaction to it in the sense of criticizing it or putting it down, or someone who's really not interested in learning it. And you force it on them and then they react badly because then they get a more of a block, mental block against it, and they collect bad views. And he said that's why if you print a book about emptiness, it's not as bad, because presumably anyone who picks up a book or buys a book is interested and wants to know. And you wouldn't break the vow in the sense of forcing it on somebody who wasn't really interested and who's going to react badly to it and then collect bad karma and then not be able to understand it even more. So that was his answer about that one. And that distinguishes it from publishing tantric materials, because those are just plain secret. Those are just, you just can't. You absolutely can't show them to anybody, no matter what their intentions are, good or bad. You can't show them if they haven't had an issue.
So what is the situation with all the tantra titles out?
Occasionally you see a line saying you not to be read unless you've had initiation, but that's where the initiation is there. You know, if you're in East West and you want it, you get it.
I think you shouldn't buy them. You shouldn't look at them unless you have an initiation. Shouldn't publish them, shouldn't release them, unless everyone who's ever going to buy it had an initiation.
So why do they release them?
I don't know.
Money.
As far as I understand it, you're not allowed to.
It's not allowed to do.
No, but then you just... If you hadn't had an initiation, not allowed to release them. Period. Okay. I guess it's okay to publish them if you're sure no one's going to look at them. Okay, anyway. I think His Holiness gives general explanations that don't get into details in order to assure that, I've heard this said, I don't know if it's what he said, but it makes sense to me, to assure that people don't get the wrong idea about something. He lets some general information out so that people don't think it's something dirty or something very strange. You know, he wants, that's what I've heard, and it makes sense to me if he restricts it to a general explanation. It seems to make sense to me, but I don't know his motivation. Say Shela.
Shela.
Lendu.
Lendu.
Shela so.
Shela so.
I'm sad to be nearing the end of the vows, because I'm not sure. The first time you hear them is when they impress you and when you try to keep them. The second time you hear them, you won't be so impressed. You probably won't even come to class. I mean, this is the chance that you have to learn them fresh and to try to keep them. If you get used to them, you won't want to. They won't be so sexy anymore. You know, they'll just be one more thing that you already heard about. So you have to work really hard to keep them now. You know, you have to work really hard to get in the habit now. 1 week after this course ends, you probably won't even be thinking about the Bodhisattva. Seriously. So you have to make a habit of it now. Try to make a habit of it now.
I mean, just as someone who's been saying these for a couple of years now, I mean, at least for myself, I would disagree with that, because I think the first time you hear it, you don't even know exactly what you're saying. Every day you say it over and over again, and every day you read each line, and it becomes more of a part of... It's not going to be
okay.
Go at first. It's not
she
gonna,
says she
not
gets
gonna,
deeper into it.
I mean,
you'll never take as much, it'll never be as novel as it is now. So while it's novel, he'll hook into it deeply. Start making a habit now. If you don't make it a habit now, there's no reason why you'd make it a habit a month from now. That's for sure. That's the way humans are.
But doesn't that turn the whole bodhisattva ideal on its head? I mean, isn't a bodhisattva somebody who perfects these things?
No, I didn't say that. I said, if you don't start now, if you start now, you'll get sweeter each month you go.
You make it sound like your feeling for it now is the highest you're ever going to have.
No, initially. If you start now, it'll get sweeter and sweeter. If you don't start now, you'll never start. How's that? I mean, start in the sense of start tracking them every day. That's what it is to keep them. If you're not tracking them every day, you're not keeping them. Okay, anyway. This refers to Kejongi. Kejongi. Kejong means the practice of virtue. Kejong. Jong means to practice. It also means to purify. It's an interesting word. Gejongi, chushi. Chushi means, I call it the four points, or the four subjects of the practice of virtue. You'll see what they are. Here they are.
Gejongi means what? The practice of wisdom?
Excuse me?
That's okay.
You okay?
It means the four.
The four points of virtue, I call it. Four points of the practice of virtue.
In the first line, what does that mean?
We didn't get to it yet.
Oh, that's
Then I get to the first one. Let me see. You have this down page.
Michael, what is that? The beginning of that? A number?
17?
No, down below.
Oh, this is the one, number one. It's like this in English.
Larshewa. Larshewa.
Shela.
Shela.
Larshewa.
Larshewa.
We should put a negative in here.
Shela.
Larmishewa.
Larmishewa.
Shela.
Shela.
Larmishewa.
Larmishewa.
By the way, you guys have to say hi on tape to all the correspondence students, okay? 1, 2, 3. She that'll be weird, okay? She means to get mad at somebody and yell at them, okay? Shewa means when somebody yells at you. Shela lar mi shewa means not to yell back. Lar means back, mi shewa means to yell. So, not yelling back when somebody yells at you. Very, very difficult. No, I mean, if you're going to be a bodhisattva, this is the bottom line. You want to know. And, you know, I do it all day long. I went to work today, my boss said something hard to me, and I, you know, immediately I start to say something hard to me.
So
very hard. This is, you know, if you say you want to be a bodhisattva, this is, here it is. You know, here it is tomorrow. Tonight, maybe during the break.
are there any nyemes?
Is this about just other
sangha,
dharma?
No, anything. Anybody.
Yeah. Is it just returning nastiness with nastiness?
Yeah. Basically, okay. You're going to see that that's it. It's returning nasty with nasty. This is well put by Mrs. Ayala. Okay. And that's the name of the ballad. Shela Lendu means, Shela Sog means, to answer, in answer to being yelled at, you yell back, etc. Okay, in the Bodhisattva vow, they only name the first one, but there's three other ones. So breaking this Bodhisattva vow, you can translate it as yelling back to someone who has yelled at you. And etc., meaning there's three other ones.
Can you just gloss that top line again? Huh?
Yeah. Shela, to having been yelled at. Lendu, in answer. Shela, so, to yell back, etc. Yelling in answer to someone who's yelled at you is breaking this bodhisattva vow. And there's four versions of it. Say, Trepala.
Trepala.
Lar.
Lar.
Nitroa.
Nitroa.
How do you think they insert something in a woodblock print when they forget to put it in? In case you ever see it, okay? There's supposed to be a me, okay, there. And that's how they carve it into the... He gets to the last line of the block, it took him like a whole day, and he goes... I'm not carving this block. Then he puts little dots and then puts in the meaning. Trepala Larmitro. It means not to get angry back at someone who has gotten angry at you.
You mean just in your mind?
Jetsun Kapa clarifies it a little bit, and he asks himself that question. And if I remember, he says... He had a good explanation that I want to talk about. Yeah, it says someone who has gotten angry at you, and more specifically, who has put you down. So instead of, I guess it's a little different from being yelled at. Shewa is more like being yelled at by your boss. And being put down is when someone gets mad at you and says something to insult you, to put you down. So you're right that, you know, normally when you learn this bodhisattva vow, you tend to think it's getting mad at someone who got mad at you. But Jetsun Kapa seems to say it's not only the getting mad, but it also involves saying something they put you down because they're mad at you. They say, oh, you're stupid or something like that. And then you come back with the same thing. You follow the four points of virtue if you don't respond, okay, in kind. You break the bodhisattva vow if you do respond in kind. Got it?
So you're not
just a simple breaking. There's no like four parts. There's no,
no.
Any of the four.
There's some yemes. We'll get there. There's some extenuating circumstances.
So it's any of the four, not all four. Is that correct?
Yeah, any of the four. Any of the four. I'm just going to do it in English because we won't finish. Yeah, number three is say Degpa La.
Degpa La.
Larmi Degpa.
Larmi
Degpa.
Degpa La.
Larmi Degpa.
Larmi Degpa.
Degpa means when someone physically hits you. Larmi Degpa means, what do you guess?
Not to do it.
Me Degpa. Not to hit.
Yeah.
That's the virtuous one. Okay. It's like the bodhisattva when you hit back. And it's very natural. It's really natural. I mean, this whole thing is you know, turning the other cheek. Right? It's all that. It's all not responding the way it was put to you. And we always use this example in the study of emptiness. We've talked about it many, many, many times. This is the crux of Buddhist behavior, educated Buddhist behavior. It's not hitting back because of any thing else except, I mean, most crudely put, it's only going to hurt you if you hit him back, okay? I mean, it's the stupidest thing you can do as a Buddhist. If you understand emptiness, you would never hit anyone back.
How is this different from the third move?
Sopa? Yeah, as if you asked me that. I believe the normal answer is this. Sopa is breaking the root vow. Involves involves this simmering period, which I think is what makes it breaking a root vow. Kunzin is the necessary motivation for breaking the root vow of striking someone, and that means you can see how the power of the karma is building up. It requires a long gestation period of getting more and more angry, more and more angry, then saying something, and then hitting the person. And here at Trepa, Dekpa and Trepa, these morning, Trola is the first moment of anger. Somebody blows up at you and you blow up back. And then Dekpa means they strike you and you hit them right back. Sangdula.
Sangdula.
Lar.
Lar.
Sangmindu.
Sangmindu.
Sangdula.
Sangdula.
Lar.
Lar.
Sangmindu.
Sangmindu.
It's over here, okay. Sangdu is a very interesting word in Tibetan. Sang is an ant's nest under the ground. And dru means to
stir up,
to dig it up. It means to open a can of worms. In the sense of attempting to expose someone else's faults, like politicians, expose, like trying to advertise someone else's partly hidden faults, okay? Like to dig into their past and find out some dirt on them. What do you call it? Yellow journalism. You know? So what it means is to try to draw attention to a person's faults that people haven't paid attention to yet. And that's sangdua. So if someone does it to you, you know, and they try to dig up some faults that the people around you weren't aware of, and then you immediately go to work trying to do it back to them, then you've broken your bodhisattva.
When you do it back to them?
Yeah. If you do it back to them, you broke the bodhisattva vow. If you don't do it back, you've kept the practice of virtue. One of the four practices of virtue.
It doesn't matter if whatever you talk about is true or false?
Yeah. We talked about it before. You're allowed, as a bodhisattva, to break the vow against divisive speech in an extraordinary case. And the example was where a religious teacher, a fake religious teacher, was leading people on a very harmful path. And then you're allowed, by any means necessary, truth or lie, to try to alienate them from him or her. In extraordinary cases where you're a bodhisattva who for... Did we go through that?
Yeah.
Many kalpas, you know, blah, 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 blah.
There's also the aspect of stopping rumor that's false about you for your...
Yeah, you have to... address rumors about yourself. You have to, or even true accusations, you have to get up and answer them. That's part of your duty as a bodhisattva. And it's kind of typical, I know for me, I either feel too offended, like I don't even want to bother with the person. To respond seems to give it some respect, you know?
Yeah.
And then sometimes you're just lazy and you say, I don't care what they think, I'll just do what I want to do. But you can't. You have to get up. You're supposed to, as a bodhisattva, get up and address those questions in that form.
This last one occurred just between two people in private, where you're exposing them to themselves.
This is normally Tangdru is normally in front of other people, in its normal sense in Tibetan.
So it's not just putting someone.
No, it's exposing their faults. No, this means in a public forum sort of way, where you want to publicize their dirt, you know, the dirt on them. And that's Tangdru.
Not if you have a realization that someone has these flaws that are terrible. I mean, if it occurs to you, thinking about this person, and it happens that you make these realization that there are these flaws, like someone that lies and all that stuff, then...
If they're lying and they're hurting other people.
No, I mean for oneself. There are these bad thoughts that you have to watch out for. Is that one of them?
That you think people are lying about you?
No, that their character is not very well developed, and they have the lying and the cheating and these kind of things. Is that, you know, how does the...
You're supposed to do what you have to do to correct them, if you can correct them. It's a bodhisattva vow. You have to try to resist them if they're hurting other people with it. And under no circumstances are you allowed to feel anything but love for them.
Sounds good.
Yeah. So that's kind of hard. All right. You tell me. Wow. Yes.
Not getting angry.
Not getting angry. Okay. I like that, the perfection of not getting angry. I really prefer that. He doesn't say anything about nyemes, okay? On that last one. Maybe they're all nasty. Tirpanami.
Tirpanami.
Yawandor. Yawandor. These are the root text words from...
The root text.
It's the root text, senor.
20 quotes.
Yeah, 20 verses on Domini Shiva. By? Chandragomi. Master Chandragomi. So say, Trapanam means, I left out the name. Trapanam means people who are angry. People who have gotten angry. Yawandor means to just ignore them. Jetson Kapa describes it this way. Someone who is angry at you, either because you did something to them, or they think you did something to them, which you didn't do to them. And then you don't go back to them and try to clear up the situation. Either make an apology if it's necessary, or if you didn't do anything, go back to them, get back to them and try to explain why it's not the way they thought it was. Those are the two possibilities. It's responsibility of Bodhisattva if someone has gotten angry at them because they think they did something to the person, that you have to get back to the person and say, look, I did do that and I'm sorry and I hope you won't be angry. Or, you know, I didn't do what you thought I did and here's why I didn't do it and you shouldn't be angry. Okay, but anyway, you can't just let them fry in their own anger. You have to go back and try to cool them down. Either with an apology, if that's appropriate, or by explaining yourself if you didn't do anything wrong and saying, look, you know, I know you think I was trying to say something bad about you in front of the boss, but I was just trying to improve the situation.
What if the cause of the other person's anger is that someone misrepresented you?
Misrepresented you to them?
Right.
That's the second case. That's where they thought you did something to them, but you didn't really. So then you really have to go back to the person and say, you know, don't think bad of me because it was that person's misrepresentation.
But then you're speaking ill of the other person.
But it's necessary. It's true. I mean, it's to set things right. As long as it wouldn't alienate them. Your intention is not to alienate them. Your intention is to clear it up.
Okay. What if somebody's angry at you and you have no idea why?
Go and do like the Japanese, you know. In Japan, I learned there, you know, you have to apologize every 5 minutes.
Yeah, it's the typical behavior that you notice in the Buddhist community. It seems more like people laugh things off. This seems more Western.
No, as a Bodhisattva, you really have to try to clear the air. And that's the whole idea.
So
don't let
happening.
It go on. Don't just ignore it. You're not allowed to just ignore it. And that's hard. I know I don't like to do that. You know, even when I know I'm wrong, I'd rather just let it blow over than to go and apologize. You know? It's human nature. He says that motivation is often pride and often jealousy, sometimes hatred, and sometimes laziness.
Pride, laziness, and what else?
Jealousy. By the way, when I taught you vowel number 7, do you remember? Can you look it up? Do you remember? It's the secondary vowel number 7.
Refusing
to teach Sadharma. Yeah, refusing to teach Sadharma. And somewhere in there, I think I said, and I want to make sure I didn't say, doubt could be one of the motivations. Or being unsure of yourself, or something like that. And here, it was a Tibetan word which I misunderstood. In Jetsun Kapa, he uses the word two minds. Two-pointed mind normally means doubting what you do. But later in the text, at a point in the text, he says, when I say two minds from now on, it means anger and harmful intent. And it doesn't mean doubt. But I didn't notice that till yesterday. Okay.
So one of the motivations could be doubt, if I can say.
I've taught you doubt in two cases that I can remember. One was with the seventh vowel. It was with the seventh vowel. I might have mentioned the word doubt. It's not doubt. It means just two.
No.
If I didn't mention it, don't worry about it. Okay.
I don't think you mentioned it.
Okay. He says exceptions. When you want to teach the person a valuable lesson. By not apologizing.
We're on 18.
Yeah. Okay. These are the nyemes.
Sorry, what was the number 2 exception?
Exceptions, I'm going to give you a whole bunch of exceptions. One is where you're a very, very powerful bodhisattva and you want to teach the person a lesson. Don't kid yourself. If you're not a powerful bodhisattva, don't kid yourself. So it almost seems like the people who are the farthest away from it do it, think they can do it the most, right? then he gives the example of... this is an example where in ancient India, and perhaps in the future of America, I don't know, but it became necessary. I can think of, we did this debate in Central Park one day, and, you know, if you were listening to people get up and give very bad, wrong explanations of emptiness, and then you have a chance to get up and battle that bad idea, that harmful idea, you know, if somebody says everything's empty so you don't have to keep your morality, and as a bodhisattva, if the time is right, you have to get up and fight like a tiger against that bad idea. They're going to get mad. Let them, okay? No problem. Right? That's a nyeme. No, it's a very, very no problem. Really.
Can you explain?
No problem. If you know what you're talking about and you have scriptural references and good logic and you know what they're talking about is rubbish, then fight it because it hurts people. But make sure you know and make sure you're doing it with the right reason and make sure you're going to win the debate before you open your mouth, okay? But there's a time for that, you know? There's a time for that. There is a time, and the Buddha did it. Great religious teachers have always done it. There is a time for blowing away really stupid ideas that hurt people. Okay? And that's a classic one. Okay? All right. Someone who's very evil and would... No matter what you do to try to pacify them, they're never gonna come to calm down anyway. Someone who would get more angry if you came back to them and brought it up again. someone that it doesn't matter how much you explain, they're still gonna be angry. Someone who would be embarrassed. I'm sorry.
It's way too fast.
Okay. Someone who would be embarrassed if you apologized, or really would prefer if you didn't apologize. Okay, we'll go back.
Go back to number 3.
Religious debate that you can blow them away and they'll get angry, and that's fine.
Okay.
Very evil person. Like, so evil. Like, you're going to apologize to Hitler for bombing. No, I shouldn't say that. Some very evil person that very, very, who's doing very evil things, and if you went to apologize to them, other people would see it and think that whatever that person's doing was right. Someone who would get more angry if you brought it up again. Someone who it wouldn't help anyway.
Well, how would you know?
You have to use the best of your judgment. Jetson Coffey has said that several times. Even if you misjudge, you don't break your vow. As long as to your best judgment, this is the case. He has said that on past occasions. Someone who really wouldn't feel comfortable or doesn't want an apology from you. Someone who would be embarrassed by an apology.
Michael?
Yeah?
What if somebody was very angry with you because you upheld one of your vows, for instance, and they didn't understand it and they didn't like what you were doing? Then to apologize for something like that, is that an exception?
I'll tell you what my answer to that. People have often mistranslated the word shejang. There's a word in here called shejang. You can translate it as apology, but it also means to go and explain yourself. In other words, you apologize for something that you really do wrong, but you're supposed to do this whether you're wrong or not. So you can't translate it as apology. It's going to explain yourself. You see what I mean? You apologize when you're wrong. You explain yourself when the guy thinks you're wrong and you're not wrong.
So clear the air.
You clear the air. If you have to apologize, if you did something wrong, apologize. If they think you did something wrong and you didn't do something wrong, explain what's going on to them. Look, I'm trying to keep a vow, and you know, I'm sorry if it offends you. And if you think it would be of help. Okay, paro shake. Paro?
Paro.
Shake it.
Shake it.
Chapapong. This means not to accept an apology. Not to accept someone else's apology.
Number
two,
we had
that already, didn't we? We'll get there. He says, Jetson Kapa says, if you want to know the difference between this one and the root vow, he says, there's no kunzin here. There's no simmering of the enmity that leads up to not accepting their apology. There's no simmering anger within you. In other words, it's simmering anger and then finally never, and not, and then refusing to reconcile with them that creates the root downfall. But if you don't have that simmering anger, then it's a
secondary
offense. He gives as examples of other motivations than simmering anger. He says, you feel like you're too important for this person to apologize to. Or you just don't feel like it, he says. Those are two examples of the motivation here. In the root vow, you've got this simmering anger, hatred, building, and then they come and you say, they come to apologize and you just throw them away. Big difference. Here you're just too lazy, or you kind of feel like you're superior and you don't have to talk to this person. Nyeme, what do you think might be the first Nyeme?
Try to teach them a lesson.
Teach them a lesson. You want to teach them a lesson. I've had this happen, you know, I go to Rinpoche to apologize for something and he'll just blow me away, and then I feel even worse, and then I don't do the thing again. So, you know what I mean? That's something. Sometimes it's a tough thing. It's a skillful means to get you not to do it again. He says, also, if the apology the person is presenting to you is improper in any way, and he gives two examples. If it's just the person is insincere. Okay? The person is not sincere. You don't have to accept that kind of apology. In Tibetan, it's called a mouth-only apology. Like, oh, I'm really sorry. And then some kind of improper, like, disrespectful, like, they're flaunting you as they apologize to you. Those kind of apologies you don't have to listen to. You don't have to sit there and listen to that kind of apology. Say chote.
Senki.
We already had chote senki jesuju. Now we're going to have chote senki jesuju. Chote sen means thoughts of anger. Thoughts of anger. Jesuju means just let them go on. Just let them flow. In Tibetan, there's three phrases that are connected to this one. One is called, you don't have to know them, but nyepa mita means you don't really consider it something wrong to be angry. The second one is nyambo miten, means you're not trying to counteract the anger. And then the third one is tangdu len, means you kind of enjoy the anger. Those are three, like, sick thoughts that you can have that will allow you to just let the anger flow on. Slow down. Okay. Not to consider it something bad. You don't think it's something bad. You think it's righteous. It's good to be angry right now. This person deserves my anger. There is no case like that. There is no such thing. Okay. They deserve your love, which may express itself in a violent bodhisattva helping response, okay? But not anger. Okay, nyebo miten means you don't try to take any counter action. Not trying to fight it. And then dungdulen means you even kind of enjoy it. You see, that's not the same thing as thinking it's not bad. Thinking it's not bad is one thing. Thinking it's cool is another thing.
I don't really understand how this could go on for any sort of period of time. You've taken the vows and you have to do shopping.
You can do it. I've done it. I do it all the time. Today I did it.
Break it and then you do the forces.
Oh, but here's the good news, okay? The name, you know the nyeme here. It's the same as dupesangujitsu. It's the same as following thoughts of desire. It's the same as letting thoughts of desire go.
Unless you have a regret.
No.
You can try, but you fail.
Yeah. If you put up the slightest, wimpiest fight, you don't break the vow. You break the vow when you don't put up any fight at all. You break the vow when you just say, oh, that's nice, let it go on. But if you have the slightest regret or bad feeling about your own anger or shame about your own anger or embarrassment about your own anger or embarrassment that you're a bodhisattva and you're letting this anger go on, and even if the anger in the end wins and overwhelms you, the slight resistance you put up is enough that you don't break the vow. You break the vow if you don't put up any resistance. So if you're practicing your vows, if you're trying to keep morality, it's hard and you have many, many fights. And even on days when you lose the fight, you don't break the vow. As long as you put up a good fight. And every time you should put up a better fight. And this thing about, you know, oh, express your anger and that's all bullshit. Okay? You gotta fight it. You have to put up a good fight. You have to struggle against it. Otherwise you'll never give up. You can remove it. You can stop it. You have to believe that. You'll come to a day when you just will never get angry. And that's the whole idea. Yeah.
I really would like some clearness on this because I'm having the worst time at work. Every day, you know, it's such a struggle. And I want to know if this neme of putting up resistance, and I mean, it feels horrible.
That's good.
That, so the one about responding in kind, is that this neme work for that one too? Because it feels so horrible and I regret it. And I'm,
he doesn't really say that.
Well, so but I think on the difference would be then.
I think the other one is most of the ones where he said put up a good fight are internal. You see, you haven't displayed any bad deed. You know, desire is, you're fighting desire in your own heart, in your own eyes, in your own mind. And with Sheila Lenda Sheila So, you're already yelling back. So yeah. During the motivational period, yeah. I mean, before you open your mouth, yeah.
Two questions.
Okay.
Just fast. What about being angry at yourself?
Yeah, same thing.
Mm-hmm. What about such feelings?
Oh, by the way, anger at yourself in the sense of regret about doing bad deeds is a virtue. That's the only, in the Abhidharma system, and I'm not saying general Buddhism, but in the Abhidharma system, that's the only negative thought which is a virtue.
Would you say hurt feelings is not anger, or is anger in another form? Like if someone doesn't view you, you just feel really hurt by it?
Yeah, I don't think it's anger. Anger is where you want to get back. I think hurt feelings can lead quickly to anger. Yeah.
What about like passive-aggressive behavior? Like someone says, oh, I'm not getting angry. They don't do anything directly. They do all these really ridiculous and horrible things that they're not even maybe conscious of themselves. They're almost worse than they disagree with you.
If it's anger. I mean, then it's. You mean they don't get angry, but they have other mental afflictions because they haven't allowed themselves to get angry.
They're dishonest in a way. They're saying, "Oh, I'm not angry." It almost would be more desirable if they would just scream and then it would be over with. Instead of.
Oh, they want to pretend that they're not angry.
Pretend they're not angry. Maybe not even.
I'd say that's the kind of anger. that's a kind of anger with a kind of ignorance. But this, that's a kind of anger with a kind of ignorance. This is just you fight the anger, and that's a Buddhist approach. You don't, expressing it is not, to express it is to reinforce it. And to fight it is to unreinforce it. And that's just the Buddhist, that's what Buddhism teaches. Ultimately, you must perceive emptiness to remove anger. Ultimately, it's the only way to stop anger. But in the meantime, you are required by your vows to struggle against it. I guess when it gets uncomfortable enough to struggle, you will use emptiness and then you'll get rid of it. One more question. We got to get.
What about if someone is expressing their anger towards someone else to you, and you know you're the recipient of this anger, but they're expressing it towards someone else, and you're in the position. How do you handle that? I mean,
we'll get to a vow about correcting people. That you're required to attempt to correct people when everything's right to correct. There are many nyemes.
Are you correcting them, or are you correcting their action towards the other person?
Well, first of all, correct their general anger.
Their perception.
First of all, try to talk them out of their anger. If you can't talk them out of it, distract them from it. At least.
Something to eat.
Oh, they're handing out ice cream outside.
This
is a real exciting time. You're close to the end. Keep going. It's probably a vow against falling asleep before you learn the last novel. Say, Nyankur?
Nyankur.
Nyankur we have already. Nyamba means gain, material gain. Kuru means korti, means other people's respect, other people's admiration. Durachir means because you want it, because you're attached to it. Kornam du means to collect students, to bring together a group of students and try to get more and more because you're attached to Nyen and Kor, specifically with this kind of class. You know. I think one of the tests is if you get jealous when you hear about other teachers collecting students. You know, that's when you feel that, then you'll know, because I get that. It's a good test, okay? If you're really joyful that other people are having good Dharma groups and growing and prospering, then I think you probably don't have this. Okay. Examples, scriptural examples of this is, you know, they prepare a nice seat for you. They get up when you walk in. They do things like that. He says they do your work for you and they don't let you do the work and things like that. We don't have this problem, okay. He says if you don't have that motivation, but they end up doing it, you don't break your vow. Okay. I mean if you collect a group of students but your motivation is not to get these things and you end up getting those things, you don't break your vow. Obviously. Most of these are common things, right?
He turned so red.
He's so observant.
I'm going to get back at you on this one.
Good. What is that? Seems if you laugh when you're
falling. Shela. Say lelo.
Lelo.
Lasso.
Lasso.
Samiche.
Samiche.
Yeah, lelo is a word that really we all remember very easily. Lelo means laying low, as in laziness in Tibetan. Lasso means etc. Selmiche means not trying to dispel it, not trying to stop it. And he gives a lot of examples. But basically it's to, you know, when you've had a bad day like this, it's just getting into laying around, you know, just doing nothing. It does not mean that after a hard work, week, you refresh yourself on Saturday. It doesn't mean that. It means where, you know how you've gotten into it in a sick way, where you've had, you know, lots of time yourself, and you just end up getting up later and later, and you like to start, you start to get addicted to just laying around and doing nothing and wasting your lifetime. It does not mean not refreshing yourself when you're exhausted. That's a different thing. That's a good thing, and then you should do that. But this means to where it gets pathological and you
become a slug.
Become a slug, yeah. Slug behavior. He says, you know, not to give yourself up to that kind. You know people like that. You've probably had periods in your life when you just slugged out, okay? Yemes are, if you're sick, it's okay to lay around. If you're very, very tired from, you know, travel or work or something like that, and you're recharging yourself, that's fine. Okay, chakbe?
Chakbe.
Jeme?
Jeme.
Tamla?
Tamla.
Den?
Den.
Chakbe?
Chakbe.
Jeme?
Jeme.
Tamla?
Tamla.
Den?
Den.
Chakbe means out of attachment or desire. Out of desire. Out of feelings of desire. Jeme tam. Jeme tam means frivolous talk. Yeah, we're going to get some examples. You ready? Jesso Kappa gives the following examples. Yeah, excuse me? Jeme tam. Jeme means frivolous, and tam means talk. Jeme tam means useless talk, wasted talk, gab. Kao tam a tam. Okay, it's in your reading. It's in your reading. Under number 23. Okay. The subjects that Jetsam Kappa outlines are sex, politics, and crime. OJK. Oh. He gives those three examples.
Say examples of what, Mike? I mean, frivolous talk?
Frivolous talk.
These are the subjects. Okay. Yeah.
That proves he knew that one day 1995 would be here.
I think it's been all throughout history.
But not television, where millions of people are sitting there watching it.
Do the Lalo
Lass. Amazing.
Yeah.
I thought those were the Nimes.
But it's to waste your time like that. You have to be really careful with it. I would include here, you know, on my own experience, but not, it's not in the scripture, but I would include most of what we read. I mean, most of. Most publications, you know, newspapers and magazines. Jetsam Kappa has a nyeme here where he says, if it's a point of information, find out the information briefly, succinctly, correctly, and leave it, you know. But if it's one of these lurid headlines in the New York Post, you know, and you're attracted to it like a fire, like a moth to a candle, you know, and you waste your whole afternoon reading about somebody's sex problem or something, then it's to me it's useless talk. And I'd say that, you know, find out the information that you need to function in your life and leave the rest alone. You don't have time for it.
Well, like right now, like paying attention like the O.J. Simpson would be a waste of time.
Yeah.
But like if you studied and read a lot about Bosnia, that would be where it's...
No, and if it were to, if you had some...
suffering or some hardship.
Yeah, and not if you intended to just sit and talk to people about, oh, how gory that picture was, or just did the kid get shot last night, or something. You know, then it's falling into useless talk, and you're just trying to do some, you're trying to say more and more lurid things because you don't have anything else to talk about during lunch. You know. But what I mean is, well, go ahead, and then I'll lecture later.
What about all the pleasantries
you
have to exchange every day as part of doing your job?
Yeah,
they
don't.
Japanese.
Yeah.
But necessary.
One of the nyemes is if you're doing it completely mindfully, you know, your mind is totally sharp, you're ready to break it off as soon as you can, you're doing it because it's absolutely necessary in your cultural situation, no problem. It's not a nyepa. It would be a nyepa to blow away people and be so weird that they didn't like you and they didn't like what you stood for. Yeah.
What about the, like, Dharma babble, you know?
It's some of the worst, yeah.
Dharma babble?
No, you see it very often where people are just comparing to see if they know more than the other person. And they say, oh, I heard about this miracle. They say, oh, well, I heard one more, you know. And I heard about this guru. And I say, no, this guru is even weirder, you know. And they go on and on and on. It happens very often. very, very awful. Those are the two memes. One is if you're maintaining a very, you know, they're blabbing, but you're focusing, you're participating as far as you have to, and you're looking for a chance to lead it into something meaningful. You know, and that's not a yet. You don't break your vow. And then he says to ask a brief factual question and get a brief factual answer, to get the information. You know, watch CNN instead of read the Post, okay? Something like that.
Read the summary on the Wall Street Journal instead of the Post is what you're saying,
read
right?
Read the Time event of the year, you know? If you don't miss anything, I'll tell you. I've been in India for a year at a time and come back. I didn't read a newspaper for a year. And there's nothing. I didn't miss anything. I mean, be very. I'm not joking. I'm serious. The time that your mind is functioning properly until the time you die, at which time you lose even the ability to think. You not only lose your face and your arms and your body and your wife and your money and your house and your job and your citizenship and your identity, your whole identity, but you lose the ability. Normally, when you die, you will lose the ability to think at all for a long time. So don't waste that precious brain on that wasted, useless junk. You know, use that precious brain time for getting out of death. You know, because when it comes, you're back to zero. You know, you're back to protozoa level. Seriously, you're very likely back to that or worse. You know, to have a human mind functioning clearly is a once in a million chance. And if Buddhism is correct, your mind level will revert to something very low after you die for many, many, many years. Most likely. So don't waste the precious mind time. You know? You don't have time. It takes a long time to cheat death. You know, you have a chance. You can do it. But the time is very brief. The chance is very, very little.
I know some people will read the star.
Don't do trimatam about people who read this.
And they do it to relax.
No, by the way, if it's to relax, that's a different thing. You know?
Seriously.
If it's that you're studied so much Dharma that you've reached your point that you know you're just going to freak out or you're going to get nervous or you're going to get anxiety or you're going to get exhausted, it's great to go read something nice, clean, you know, relax. Relaxing is, in all the Buddhist scriptures, it says, in a true sense that you're exhausted and you've done your best and then it's time to rest, you must relax. You know, go see a good movie, you know, read some comics. That's fine. But we're not talking about that. We're talking where you're healthy, you're not tired, you're with your friends at lunch, and you just wasting time. Wasting precious brain time. Yeah.
What would be wrong with reading the New York Times or Time Magazine?
Because
it would seem that would increase your sense of connectedness and compassion to see the injustices and atrocities that are going on in the world.
No, if it does. If that's the effect on you, good. If it's something you're going to forget in a week or 2 weeks, and it's not having that effect on you, then don't waste it. The definition of a Buddhist book is one which will show you an unerring means to achieve nirvana or enlightenment in this life. In other words, Buddhist literature, which normally a monk's reading is restricted to. I mean, before you open it, think, is this going to teach me directly a method to escape suffering and death myself? It can accent, enhance your feelings of compassion to read about the horrors of Bosnia. And in that case, it's good. But if you have a chance to spend an hour and you're not exhausted and you have the capacity, pick up some kind of book that's going to teach you how to reach nirvana, which is teaching that as its direct subject.
You're
going to read about what?
Because you have to read.
That's not, that's, that has a function. I mean, that's, we're talking about useless. Thingamton, you know, I think. Yeah, David Holden, which means one pointed custard. It means the words mean vivid holding.
Vivid holding? Wasn't it something green?
No, the The thing here was in... Green is one example of a vividness, but there could be many others. But thingy-thingy dunmitsu. Dunmitsu means not to seek the meaning of concentration, single-pointed concentration. Not, I should say, the nice way in English to put it, failing to seek the meaning of single-pointed concentration. And what it means is someone else is teaching about how to achieve meditative concentration. And you fail to go out of bad motivation, meaning you're too proud to go because it's like maybe some one of your fellow students or somebody who's good at teaching it, or you're just too lazy to go. It assumes that you want to learn how to do it.
What if you have another class?
Here's the nyemes, okay?
I'm serious.
The nyemes are if you're sick and you can't go. Another nyeme is if doubt that they are teaching it correctly. You have some suspicion that they're not. If you really doubt the... Who is that? Sorry. Okay. It's a bad year for you doubt that they know what they're talking about. Okay. And you don't have to go. Or if you're already a master of it. And you don't have to go.
Okay. That's the third one?
But yeah, those are the third
ones. What were the first
two? You're sick, you can't go. You can't physically make it. Or you doubt that they're teaching it correctly. What it means is that's, as we said many times, to see emptiness directly, you must reach the equivalent of the first form realm. You're even out of this realm. You have to be able to keep your mind in that level. And if you don't meditate for like an hour a day, you will never reach it. Absolutely sure you'll never reach it. So whenever you get a chance to learn how to do it properly, you must take it. And you break your bodhisattva vow if you don't take it.
So, Michael, what about when different schools teach you different ways? I mean, and you're told to follow a school, not to get confused.
And you don't have to go.
But it's not in one of those exceptions.
You can say you doubt the other thing. No, your teacher said, you know, you will get confused if you go to a different one.
Yeah, but it's not one of the exceptions.
Michael.
Yes.
When you perceive emptiness, that means you go above all the realms.
Directly.
So that means you...
When you perceive it directly...
You move above all the realms.
The platform on which your mind is standing... Is not in this realm. In other words, your mind is not...
So you have no body, your life?
No, your body isn't sitting there. But your mind is on a different level.
Right.
Your mind is actually not in this realm.
Right. So you go above all the realms.
And no, it's actually inside the second realm. Of the three. Worldly realms. Okay.
The third realm.
Yeah. Say something.
Samden.
Jipa.
Jipa.
Bomije.
Bomije.
Samden means, again, meditative concentration. The ability to meditate deeply. Jipa means obstacles. Bongmi je means failing to remove them. So what it means is you're failing to get rid of the obstacles to good meditation. Jetsun Kapa says something very beautiful. He goes through the obstacles as presented by Nagarjuna. Okay, we're going to give the five obstacles presented by Nagarjuna. Then he goes through one more presented by Bodhibhadra, who was a teacher of Adikshana. Take that back. No, he doesn't do this. Just the ones presented by Nagarjuna. And then he says, by the way, you shouldn't have these obstacles even when you're walking around during the day. What I mean is, he's not talking about breaking your vows, but he's talking about the obstacles that I'm about to mention. They disturb your concentration, whether you're concentrating on your work, or concentrating on the subway, or concentrating at all. So Jetsun Kapa says, don't restrict it to the realm of learning to meditate. Try to sharpen your mind throughout your whole activities. And keep your mind clear of these five obstacles, obstructions, that from clear thinking, all throughout the day. Try to keep your mind clear of them. So the first one is, it's called good get. Say Gyopa.
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 Good. These are always mistranslated. Everybody mistranslates them. They don't read the commentaries. The words themselves don't mean what they say. So people always... Gupa means to be wild. Like a Miga is a gorilla. A human, a wild human. Okay? We had it during meditation class. You know what it is. Remember Gupa? We had Gupa and Chuma. Gupa is the tendency of the mind when you're trying to meditate to flip around to attractive objects. To flip around to things that you like. You know, it goes to what are you going to have for lunch. It goes to what are you going to do after work. It goes to a movie that you like. It goes to a girl that you like. It goes to some other thing that you like. It tends to, the minute you try to meditate, the mind tends to be restlessly attracted. It's just moving around to various objects in your life that are pleasing to you.
Is it wandering? Same as wandering?
It's wandering in a very specific sense to desirable objects. Gyepa generally means regret, but in this case it means something completely different. It means missing things in the sense of thinking about things that you had, thinking about people that you knew. And if you try to meditate, if you go into a long retreat, I don't know why, but I find myself, and I know other people who have, find yourself thinking about people in your life that you used to know, or things that you used to be, or, you know, decisions you made, or, you know.
It's memory.
It's like memory, but it's like wish. It's just like desire wandering, but in the past. Something like that, you know.
That's what memory is.
We could call them desire wandering. Okay? Well, memory can be remembering your bodhisattva vows or something. You know what I mean? That's not a gyepa.
Nostalgia.
You could say that. Thinking about days and times gone by. As you get older, it becomes more important. And missing things, you know, if you're in meditation, you're thinking about your friends or your job.
Vacation.
Say nusen.
Nusen.
Nusen. Nusen means any kind of bad thought about a person or something, you know, like irritation or hatred or... And if you've ever tried to do long retreats, I just heard a monk last week. I asked him, he told me he did a 3-year retreat. I said, that's amazing, you know, I've never done one that anything like that, so tell me what it's like. And he says, and the main thing he remembered about his whole 3-year retreat was that there was one guy there that he didn't like. And the guy didn't like him either. And the guy used to write in notes about how, don't look at me like that. This is the guy's memory of his 3-year retreat. Was the first thing he mentioned, and the main thing that he thought about was how it ruined his retreat, you know, to have any kind of bad thought about something. When you go into a long retreat, you try to meditate deeply, it enhances all your thoughts, for better or worse. If you've got good thoughts, they get divine. And if you've got bad thoughts, they get very strong, very exaggerated, very unreasonable, irrational. They blow up and it ruins your meditation. If you've got the slightest thought about someone you don't like during your meditation, it ruins it, period. Can't concentrate. Forget it. It'll ruin the whole time. Very dangerous. Okay. Next one he says is Mukhtani.
It's dangerous, you said?
Dangerous in the sense of wasting that precious, hard-to-get few weeks in meditation or a few days. Or when we get Connecticut, I'd like to people doing retreats like every month. You know, like you go out for a week, you have keys, you go out and do your meditation. You go on a retreat like once a month, 3 days, something like that. And then you do your... Those of you who have to do your Neljoma retreats, you do them up there. 1 month retreats. Anyway, say Mugni.
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 Mukpa is the Tibetan word for fog. And here it means foggy-mindedness, you know. It means a kind of, not describe it, where the mind is just dull. What's that?
Clouded over.
Yeah, you could say clouded. Dull. You get this, for example, when you think you're meditating pretty well and you really just fall kind of... if you've ever meditated for a long time, you know what it is. This is kind of dull-mindedness. You're not focused, but you're sitting very nice. And you're just like, for some kind of... You think you're concentrating because you're not moving. And your body's all nice and you, but your mind is just dull. It's just flat. That's mukpa. Ni is more precise. It's drowsiness. And if any of you try to meditate regularly, and you know, after a meal, or if you're tired from work, and if you're too tired from work all the time, and ni is always coming during the meditation, I'd say you gotta think about the work. Because you don't have time. You don't have lifetime. Better to make a little less money and find one that doesn't exhaust you. Because if it exhausts you, then what's the meaning of living? You know, you won't reach your goals in this life. You'll die. And then the purpose of getting the money is also lost. You know, so you might have to reconsider that. If you're too tired, or you don't have the opportunity to not be drowsy continually, for years and years, it's not going to stop. You're going to die first, or you're going to get too old to meditate. So reevaluate it. You know, think about if there's something you have to do to get the time. If you can't meditate clearly about an hour a day, you cannot see emptiness directly. If you cannot see emptiness directly, your life is wasted, basically. So it's you might have to reevaluate that. Yeah.
When we are talking about these, are we talking about the actual physical states, or are we talking about the state that the mind has given these? I mean, this is the mind state.
No, it's actual plain old drowsiness. And if you honestly evaluate your meditative performance when you get home from work, you'll often find that you're in no shape, and you never will be in any shapes. You can't do it. You're too tired. And then you've got to think about what your life is about.
Yeah. People could get up earlier when they're fresh.
No, there are times. I'm not saying you have to meditate when you get home, you know. But I'm saying evaluate your life. If you don't have a time during the day that you're fresh, that you can meditate for an hour, then you have to readjust something, I say. Because you know, what's the use? Then what are you going to do? Okay. Dupala Dumba. Say Dupala.
Dupala.
Dumba.
Dumba.
Dupala.
Dumba.
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 Dupala Dumba means attraction for the objects of the senses. It's a great enemy of meditation.
Isn't that much the same as
I was at Vajrapani and they were cooking these.
Yeah, we do them all the time.
These are cookies. That smell was getting into my room. Any kind of sounds, any kind of music or sounds, they'll destroy your meditation. Any kind of attachment to smells, things like that. Excuse me?
So that means you shouldn't have any tapes, like meditation tapes? Like if you have chanting
tapes? Jeff Kapa is very clear about that, and he says meditation is a function of the mental consciousness, which means it's all done inside.
So you shouldn't have any...
It's done... You can prepare yourself with a tape. You can prepare yourself by looking at an object. But when it comes time to meditate, it's all internal.
So
it's all in the mind.
Okay.
And Jetsun Kapa is very vehement about that. He attacks some schools in his day that said, oh, you should sit and stare at a picture or something. He says, no, meditation is an internal thing. You can prepare by looking at a picture. Then put the picture away, and meditation means mental consciousness. It's awareness of your mind. It's awareness of something mental. It's not physical. It's not an object. It's not focusing on a physical object ever.
Okay, but when you use mantras though, doesn't that sometimes to help you?
It helps you, but you're not meditating. When you do that,
in
the true sense,
right?
I actually can't talk about it. There is a whole.
But when you use mantras, doesn't that create like more vibration?
I can't talk about mantras. Mantras are sacred Buddhist.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
What should you be thinking about while you're meditating?
Oh, boy.
I get the tapes.
No, there's a whole class there. Yeah. Basically, you could do an analytical meditation on your bodhisattva class. How close have I come to breaking these? And by doing that, you get used to reviewing them.
That'll get you to emptiness?
It's an indirect cause. It's not the direct cause. The direct cause is to study the logical proofs of emptiness. But the indirect cause would be gathering the virtue. You cannot see emptiness if you don't have the virtue, even if you have the reasoning capacity. There's two things. It's very interesting. You can have a very, very sharp mind, but if you're not doing it for the right reasons, and if you don't have some kind of real powerful virtue, which mainly comes from serving a lama or serving, you know, like cooking for a lama for a long time, or just some, it's something that you wouldn't expect, but to collecting some kind of very powerful virtue, and then in conjunction with that, studying it all very logically, you need both of those things.
Those are the two main causes for seeing emptiness?
I'd say those two would be enough. Studying very well, meditating daily, and then you must collect some tremendous virtue, which comes from serving other people, mainly.
What would be the main cause of being able to have good meditation?
Thinking about the benefits of meditation is supposed to start you off, which in our case could be negative.
I was thinking of karma cause.
If you don't see emptiness in this life, very likely that your brain will go back to protozoic state, and I'm not joking, you know. Your brain after the moment of death is very likely to go to a very crude state where you're not able to think clearly anymore, and for a very, very long time. So in a negative way, you don't have much choice. You better learn to meditate. Okay,
does that apply not only to the after death states, but into future incarnations? The protozoan state. No, I'm serious.
To be a clear thinking human, is the odds against it are infinite. Are very close to infinite. You know, the odds that after you die, you'll have a clear thinking human mind, the odds against that are almost infinite, according to Buddhism. So you got to do it now. You have to do it now. You just can't count on anything after that.
Can't count on your friends?
Well, I'd say you can't count on having any ability to think clearly after the moment of your death. Your brain, your mind will very likely, according to Buddhism, almost surely be very, very crude and not able to think clearly for many, many, many years after that.
In other words, you won't recognize them.
You'd be somewhere else. Forget it. No, you'll never recognize them. Doubt it. Unlikely. Unlikely that you'll be a human.
So. You mean the state of humanness?
Even a confused human?
Yeah, even a confused
human.
Okay, last one.
It's against my religion, that idea. It's against my religion, that idea.
Say, tetsum?
Tetsum
is very, very... tetsum means doubt. And what it often means is, in meditation, it means, first of all, it doesn't refer to critical doubt, okay? The Buddha said you must be critical. He said over and over again, if you believe anything I say without analyzing it, you're going to believe the next guy who comes along and says do the opposite. So I don't want students like that. He said it over and over again. Be critical, check what I say, analyze it, test it, see if it fits your own experience, see if I'm internally logical, see if it's externally logical, see if what I taught before and what I taught after makes sense. In that case, you have to have doubt. But this kind of doubt refers to this destructive doubt where you're too lazy to decide something. You know, you go on with this sort of a flip-flop thing. You know, are you going to learn meditation or not? No, I mean, make up your mind. It means
sure.
Make up your mind. You know, are you going to follow the bodhisattva vows or not? Because most of the time when you don't, it's just that you didn't decide because you're too lazy to decide. You know, are you going to stop this bad habit you have or not? I mean, make up your mind. You know, are you going to figure out whether karma is true or not? Or are you just going to go on with this kind of a fuzzy tetzel, where, well, maybe it is or maybe it's not, but I don't have time to think about it right now. That's tetzel. It ruins your meditation. It does not refer to being critical. You have to be critical.
So it's
it refers to being, yeah, indecisive in the sense of too lazy to come to a conclusion about important things. Yeah.
If the Dhammapada is not stopping the obstacles, for what period of time is that?
Let's see if he says. Yeah, that's a good point. He was very clear at the other one, but I don't think he... I would bet that he would say during an extended meditation session. Not struggling against these things.
So if you just sit there being dull for 5 minutes, you've broken the vow?
If you don't fight it, if you don't... Nippon, you can say yes, attempting to... You can say attempting.
What happens when it just happens and then you just go, whoops,
yeah.
You know?
It's a Yomon Chen Mayinbe Nyepa. It's not a Nyeme. It's an offense which was not caused by a bad thought, but caused by laziness or forgetfulness. Those are still Nyepas. Still breaking. But again, it's if you're trying to fight it, it's okay. You know, if you're sleepy, you don't break your vow. If you're sleepy and you don't boma, if you don't try to stop it, you break your vow. Sometimes being, and he goes through a long thing of what to do in each case. I mean, just very briefly. If you have a problem with sense desires, do the meditation on rotting. There's a whole meditation where you let your body rot, you let the world rot. It's in the Abhidharma. We might do it someday. It's very powerful. If you have a problem with hating people, try to meditate on loving kindness.
Giving into a lack of self-confidence,
like
I can't.
No, not like that. It's not making up your mind about important Buddhist things.
Just
because you're lazy, or you don't care enough, stuff like that. Okay. Sleepiness, drowsiness, fogginess. He says, uplift your thoughts with some virtue. You know, think about the Dalai Lama. Think about something good. Get your mind up a little bit. If you have to, get up, go outside, wash your face, come back. Go sleep if you have to sleep. If you have a problem with your mind wandering to the past or to desirable objects, catch it and bring it back into the object.
Bring it back.
Bring it back to the object of your meditation. If you have a problem with tetsong, stop being half-assed about it and make up your mind. I mean, there's certain Buddhist principles that you're just avoiding because you're lazy. Go analyze them. Okay.
Did you zip one for the first one?
Yes.
Yeah.
Bring back the
Bring the mind back.
Did we skip one?
You skipped the new sound.
New sound?
Which one did I skip?
New sound.
Number two.
Loving kindness. We're going to shift to English mode, okay? It's getting late.
Michael, what are the ramifications of breaking the secondary vows?
It was... First of all, you have to confess it in front of one another.
No, but, I mean, is the, you know, like the...
What is it, duty or... It doesn't... He didn't say anything like that it froze your spiritual progress the way that
it's just like, oh, you messed up and you try again sort of thing.
I think it delays your reaching Buddhahood and Nirvana. It causes a serious roadblock. It doesn't... Root vows freeze it, your progress. This would impede your progress. Seriously. That's why they are root... These are the secondary vows against collecting goodness, the morality of collecting goodness, which is mainly to get yourself to enlightenment. It blocks you from reaching enlightenment.